Hey everybody, what is up? Chad Wesley Smith here, another episode of the Jug Life Podcast, joined as always by marvelous Max Montana. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well. How you doing, Chad?
Good, man. Yeah, we've been doing so many of these in like the batches and stuff. I feel like we haven't recorded an episode for a long time, though they've been getting released every week, so.
Yep.
So this week we want to talk about USAPL Nationals, and in light of that, you know, besides giving a little bit of preview of the action, I want to talk about some of the goals, how to best prepare yourself for a meet, both mentally and physically. So something that Max and I have both done as athletes, as coaches. So we'll get into a bit of that, talk about some of our favorite matchups coming up at Nationals who we're excited to watch, and yeah, it'll be the episode. So leading off with a physical preparation for the meet, you know, there's plenty of information, Juggernaut YouTube and other podcasts and all the stuff that we do where we talk about the training cycle and how to organize that and peaking blocks and everything. And that's going to be the real physical preparation for meet week, because there's no way that you're going to, you know, save a shitty training cycle with a great taper.
Yeah.
But what you can certainly do is fuck up a great training cycle with a bad taper. So a couple goals to keep in mind as you get into the taper, and I'm using taper is really just the deload for competition. You know, normally a deload week, reduction in intensity, reduction in volume between training cycles. We just changed to calling it a taper week for those days or week or 2 weeks, depending on the athlete as they lead into the competition. So the first thing is that during the taper, you need to keep technique as sharp as possible. And you're going to do that by doing the competitive exercises. Like, there's not much that matters, you know, in terms of accessory work and all that type of stuff once you get to the week of the meet. You know, I typically have people doing every other day sessions for, you know, their last 3, 5, 7 days, depending on how long their taper is. They'll train every other day, and each of those sessions do all three competitive lifts. As you look at the taper for weightlifting instead, Max, how would you approach that?
So that's actually kind of interesting, because what we're, you know, we know the main goal of a taper is that we're trying to reduce any fatigue or decay any fatigue we've accumulated, and at the same time trying to maintain technical skills. And in powerlifting, that's kind of a broad, kind of vague, not vague, but a broad spectrum there, right? You know, you could probably get away with, you know, on the far end, you could get away with maybe not even doing a squat or deadlift or bench press for a week before a meet, and potentially get away with that, technically. Not that that's a recommended idea, but that's kind of the extreme there. In powerlifting or in weightlifting, you've got so much more going on in the technique and the tactile nature of doing snatches and clean and jerks regularly to maintain that intricate kind of feel of the lift. So your frequency is going to have to be relatively high, because you want to maintain technical skill. But the balance there is that you're not doing too much trying to, you know, preserve skill and ultimately end up, you know, overdoing it and being tired for the meet. That's where I think a lot of the you know, sort of art of a taper and the sort of you know, experience of a coach and a person come in, or an athlete come in, getting that right, making sure you're balanced well. So you're going to see much more frequency from a weightlifter in the taper, and in general, that's because of the nature of the lifts.
Yeah, I think it's almost as simple, like, to visually understand the difference between powerlifting and weightlifting in terms of the taper. If you go to powerlifting meets, you know, big meets, Worlds, Nationals, all that stuff that we've been to, the training hall is very small or non-existent, where the training hall leading up to weightlifting meets is, like, the place to be. You see people still doing, you know, really cool training that's fun to watch because they're still going heavy in those couple days leading up to it.
Yep.
And I'll say for me personally, definitely a change I made throughout my powerlifting career was doing more the week of the meet. I think for my first couple meets, I would typically, you know, take my last heavy session like the Friday or Saturday prior to the meet. And then the week of the competition, maybe do like a very small workout on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah.
And even that was typically not a squat, bench, and deadlift workout. Rather, it was like, you know, just some accessory stuff, kind of get the blood flowing. And that takes, you know, that helps with the decay fatigue part. Depending on how much of that accessory work you're doing, that could help with one of our other goals of maintaining fitness, but it definitely does not go with the keep the technique as sharp as possible. And maybe, maybe it was just as my own career went on, I became more fit and more tolerant to doing more training. But, you know, when I had my biggest totals of 23:14 and 23:25, usually there, like the Monday of the competition, I would go up to decent weights in the squat and bench, you know, like 675 in the squat and maybe 450 or 480 in the bench press. So not, you know, not to openers and maybe last warm up in the bench and second to last warm up in the squat kind of weights.
Yeah.
Just because if you get someone who, particularly who has a long taper, I was using a 2-week taper, to go 2 weeks without touching, you know, any significant weight, and then you get to the meet, it can be a little bit jarring.
Yeah, very much.
So a couple takeaways in there for people designing taper programs for powerlifting. Yeah, you know, I mentioned going a bit heavier relative in the bench press than I was in the squat, and then heavier in the squat than I was in the deadlift. That's because those lifts don't, you know, all generate the same amount of fatigue. The bench press isn't huge fatigue. Squat is going to be pretty good, and the stronger you are, the more fatigue it's going to generate. Deadlift, you know, sumo deadlifters can go a bit heavier relative than conventional, but you're not going to be going up, you know, maybe I have people go to 60% the week of a meet in the deadlift. You know, a very beginner lifter could go a bit heavier. Females can go a bit heavier, but your relatively heaviest training would be in the bench press. Particularly for female lifters, who we coach a lot of those, they got to keep some decent volume in that week of the meet in the bench press, because they'll lose fitness very fast there. So a typical kind of taper workout that I would write, let's say on a Monday or Tuesday for someone who's going to compete on Saturday, they might go, you know, up to 70% for a single in the squat, and then drop down to like 55 or 60% for a couple triples, just focusing on technique, yeah, not generating fatigue, just keeping some work in. The bench, they're probably about 10% higher than that in the bench, so maybe up to 80 or even 85, 90% in the bench press for some smaller female lifters, and then they'll drop, you know, 10, 15% from that, and usually do some sets of five there, And the deadlift, we essentially keep to just singles, you know, like 6 to 10 singles at 50 to 60%, just so they can feel that weight.
Here's a question for you that's kind of interesting. If you were, let's say, didn't have the experience you had as a coach, would your recommendation for new coaches be, obviously finding the optimal thing is correct, but would you say for somebody who's maybe self-coached or a really new coach, it would be more wise during a taper to undershoot the decaying of fatigue, meaning that maybe you do a little bit too much versus overshooting that and doing too little work and not maintaining fitness?
Yeah, if I had to choose between, if I know I'm going to do it wrong, so I have to choose which way to do it wrong, Yeah, I would rather, ensure that fitness is still high, because I think it's easier to adjust attempts that way. Like if on Wednesday you went up to last warm-ups or openers or something, even like you know that those are there, and where if you maybe try and outsmart yourself and think that you're really gonna decay this fatigue and then come into the meet and feel great and put this huge performance on, you could get to that last warm-up kind of weight and be like, oh shit, I've lost fitness, I've lost strength, this feels really heavy, scramble over to the table and try and lower your openers. That was something for me in my own competing. I've said this a bunch of seminars and everything, is that I would get these huge carryovers training to competition. So my first meet, I squatted 800 pounds. I think 765 was the most I'd done in training, and that was like 10 days out from the meet. So I go and open at 725 and jump to 800, and it happens, and awesome, great. Next meet, 805 in the gym, 865 at the meet. And next meet, 825 in the gym, 905 at the meet. I opened at 835. I opened heavier than I'd done in the gym, which was something that I ended up doing several times in my career. My first meet back from herniated discs, I think I did 825 in the gym and ended up doing 937 at the meet. I had missed like 865 in the gym, missed 865, and then opened at 848. So I'd done 825, missed 865, opened the meet at 848. So I could put a lot of faith in the taper and peaking process. But even the mental part of that was still tough for me. Like, even though I know this is how it's supposed to work, this is how the training is designed. It's science, not an exact science, but science nonetheless. And this is how it's going to happen, and this is how it happened before. Every time when you're putting that weight, you're going to tell the scoring table, 90 pounds more than I did in training, please. Thank you. There's still some trepidation in that, but it seemed to always work out pretty well.
I mean, you have an exceptional ability to peak. It has got to be one of the best in the world. I mean, your ability to do weights in competition that you haven't even touched, and consistently. I mean, obviously your programming is excellent to allow that to happen, but I think there's a big skill and psychological component to that too, right? I mean, like you just said, I mean, walking in and saying, hey, this is more than I've put on my back in a long time. Let's see how it goes. That's a pretty impressive aspect of both you as an athlete, but also you as a coach and your programming and your system. I have a very different story in my regard for weightlifting, in that when I can think of a meet where I went to the competition and we showed up about 5 hours early maybe, and we took a maximum front squat. I actually made a PR front squat before the meet.
As one does, I mean.
And of course, because you got to be strong for the lifts. And I'm pretty sure I made zero lifts at the actual competition 5 hours later. So not the best strategy.
Well, thank you for the compliments there. So to get a bit more into the decaying fatigue part, the first thing that you have to do for that is train at the right volume and intensity, not too much but not too little, so you can maintain fitness. That's going to differ for everyone listening, largely based upon their training and biological age, how much weight they're lifting, and the size of the lifter. And if people want to go to our YouTube and watch this week's week in review, I discuss that. I get on the whiteboard and talk about it for Marissa, Kristen, Maddie, and Joanne, and talk about some of the different considerations there between 21-year-old Maddie with 2 years of lifting experience compared to Marissa and Joanne, who are in their 40s, been lifting probably as long as Maddie's been alive, compared to Kristen, who's a little bit bigger, more muscular, lifting a bit heavier weights, and how that changes stuff. If people can also check out my Designing a Peaking Block YouTube video for more discussion there, as well as in Scientific Principles of Strength Training, the book, we have a little table to help you decide like how long your taper should be and everything. But as a general rule of thumb, and this is going to be a really big range, and you know, people may listen to this and be like, well, you know, but what percentage do I do? I'm going to make a video very in-depth designing a taper, look for it in a couple months. But you know, you're probably going to be lifting weights between 50 and 80% of your max. You know, some very small people and female lifters in the bench press could go higher than that. But 50 to 80%, so I've really narrowed it down for you there. For sets of 1 to 3 reps and, you know, 4 to 10 sets within that range. You know, it's the less work you can do and still focus on and still feel like you're getting something out of it technique-wise, I think is really important. That tends to come with experience. As a lifter becomes more experienced, they're able to feel their technique better at lower weights. You know, it's very difficult with like 135 pounds or something to know if you did a good squat or a not very good squat, because it's just not giving you any feedback. But as you get more and more advanced, I think you can, those real subtleties of foot pressure and everything, you can feel better. And that's what you should strive for as a lifter, or encourage your athletes towards as a coach, to really be mindful about every weight they're taking, so they can get something out of every set. And then the other component of decay and fatigue, besides, you know, training with the right overloading parameters, are going to be employing recovery adaptive strategies. And we have a whole video about this with Dr. James Hoffman and a Jug Life episode, so go and check those out for sure. And there are some strategies that he talks about in the video that we don't recommend for, you know, all the time regular training. And temperature therapy is pretty high up on that list. Stuff like ice baths or contrast showers, because the mechanism by which they improve recovery is by removing inflammation. And while inflammation is this really important adaptation signal, the week before a meet and the days leading up to competition, there's not really any adaptations happening anymore. There's just feeling as good as you can feel.
Yeah.
So if ice baths or contrast showers or cryotherapy makes you feel better, even though I know cryotherapy science is a bit dubious, you know, that's something that you should do, that I encourage. You know, contrast showers are the ones that I encourage people towards the most. And I'll tell them, you know, if they can do those twice a day, three times a day in the week leading up to a meet, to go ahead and do that, because it would be tough to, I can't imagine a scenario of overdoing that type of recovery strategy leading up to a meet.
Yeah. I think there's definitely a thought process in younger lifters and newer people to believe that there's like a recovery is a thing that you can apply to your training, and it's just kind of something you add on to it. Like, oh, I do ice baths all of the time, year round, or whatever. Or I do all these recovery strategies. You know, there's some that can be used and employed, you know, more frequently, but it's certainly something to be aware of, that there are things that should be organized, just like in training, right? A periodization of the actual recovery strategies. So it's important for newer people to remember and realize that, you know, there's things that are going to be better suited to better times, especially during a taper.
Yeah. So the other real, you know, popular recovery stuff that's going to be happening during the taper and the week of competition is going to be soft tissue work. So whether that's massage, Agrastin, active release, you know, I like to get that stuff done the week of a meet and during deload weeks, and you know, it can be very beneficial. A couple things to keep in mind with that. You know, first off, like with a Graston, or you know, instrument-assisted soft tissue therapy, if you're leaving your physio's office and you're like fucking bruised, or it looks like you fell off a motorcycle and got dragged across asphalt by and you're all bruised up from the Graston, that's not helping.
Money.
Yeah, like that's not helping you recover. That is trauma to your system. So that should never be happening, but certainly not during the week of competition. You want to avoid any kind of like really deep therapy, because all that stuff is generating some level of muscular damage and creating like a localized inflammation to prompt the body to drive more recovery resources to that area. It hurts, so you rub it, and then the body knows there's more blood there. There's inflammation. Let's transport more blood and nutrients and everything there to help it recover. But if you're 2 days out from a meet and you go get a deep tissue massage and you feel sore from it the next day, that's not what we want. So, typically I'd say to cut out any soft tissue work, 2 to 3 days before competition. If you're going to hop on the foam roller or lacrosse ball or whatever in the warm-up room, that's part of your routine, that's fine. But harder, more focused work, 2 to 3 days beforehand, I'd cut that out.
Yeah. It shouldn't be a situation where you're, you could potentially file a safe sport and file for your massage therapy.
So moving on from the physical preparation during the week of the meet to the mental preparation, and this is just as big, if not bigger, than the physical side of things. So the first thing that you can do during a meet week to mentally prepare yourself for the competition is to be as organized as possible. To be OCD, anal retentive organization, to limit stress. And though you may be, you may be stressing out about how OCD you are earlier in the week, it'll save you from being stressed out at the actual competition. And this all goes to the idea of to control what you can control, don't worry about what you can't.
Yeah.
Things that you can control, making sure you have all of your equipment with you, all the food and liquids that you need at competition, that you have your warm-ups planned out well, written down. That if there's going to be kilos for a powerlifting meet, if there's kilos in the back room, that you have them written down in kilos. If it's pounds, you have it written down in pounds. If you don't know, you have both ready. So you're not just going there and winging it, and you're not getting to the meet and it's time to bench and put your wrist wraps on and you're like, I forgot them, or I don't have my socks. I don't have my long socks for the deadlift, all that kind of stuff. Make a list. Lay it out, double check it, make sure it's all taken care of. In regards to the food stuff, particularly the day of a meet, the week of a meet is not the time for new things. It's not the time to try new supplements, to eat some different superfood or whatever the fuck you're thinking is a good idea. It's probably not. It's the time to eat stuff that sits, how your body responds to it, sits easy on your stomach. So get that stuff, Tupperwares, whatever you need to do, bring it with you, be prepared. If you're traveling for competition, it can be hard or unrealistic to bring a lot of food with you, but, find like the basic restaurants that are everywhere in the country or everywhere in the world, Subway or Chipotle, chain kind of restaurants, because you know what you're going to get there 99 times out of 100.
That's a really great point, actually. I think a lot of people especially if you're traveling like overseas or something, take some time to research and look at where the food is around you. And make sure that there's options. It's not just, there's going to be something by the hotel, because you might get to a place or a hotel and find out that, you know, there is no food within 10 miles, and that's just a stressful event. So definitely, that's a huge deal. As well as, obviously, you have to invest in your bagel fund and your Sour Patch Kids before you get there, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to show up without a 10-pound bag of Sour Patch Kids and gummy bears.
And I think, yeah, you and I have no issues with this because we do it on every one of these trips, but if you have to eat at the same place over and over and over, that's fine. If that's the good place and it's a known quantity that you establish on the first day, like when we're in Canada for Worlds, and you know, I mean, neither of us are competing, we're just there looking good. But for Marissa and Marissa and Joanne, I mean, we went to the same place for breakfast every day. It was delicious. Yeah. Yes. And how many times did we eat at Nando's?
Many times.
Yeah, it's like you could get really basic, simple foods, chicken, rice, veggies, you know, all that stuff that it's not, you know, it's not going to upset your stomach. You're not going to going to feel bad at the competition with it. What about the other part of mental preparation, Max? You know, this is something I've never really like actively gone out of my way to do. But I know a lot of people, I know Joanne does this. I think it's something that I've always just kind of done without thinking about it, but like visualizing the meat performance. You got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a huge thing. I think I was in the same boat that you're in, and I think a lot of people are, in that when I was competing, you know, 99% of my day outside of lifting and outside of doing things that I had to focus on was basically just thinking about lifting and thinking about the numbers I was going to lift. You know, there's some definite positive reinforcement you can do and, you know, visualizing yourself lifting, but outside of just walking around thinking about it, you know, having a plan, and the plan doesn't have to be this number, that number, and this number. Your plan can really be the process. How am I going to approach my opener? How am I going to approach my second, my third? You know, visualizing success. But in addition to just thinking about lifting all the time, take time out of your day and dedicate it to the process of visualization. You know, sit down and allocate, you know, 10 minutes. That's a long time. 10 minutes to sit down, no distractions, no phone, no nothing, eyes closed, visualizing how the process is going to go. That contributes significantly to success. And in addition to just having a plan and having confidence, you're teaching yourself a skill that's going to benefit you later on in you know, lifting and in training. And it's a big deal. So I encourage people a lot to invest time into visualization, especially as they get closer to meets. And the kind of thing that's not, you know, there's a lot of different, I think, you know, different authors that have opinions about what to do. The key is that you're doing something that you think is working, right? Some people may have certain suggestions that differ from others, but the key is you have a method that you do, and you do it consistently. Find the visualization stuff that you agree with from different, you know, different coaches, different authors. And apply it to yourself regularly and make it work for you.
Something that I have done that I think was pretty useful was, you know, because everyone's recording every lift they're doing, is to take, you know, all of your best lifts from a training cycle, whether it's just one specific lift like the squat or all your lifts put together, and just, you know, take 5 minutes, edit those, you know, on your phone into like just one video, just like a continuous loop, and just, so you can just watch yourself being successful.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, just like a little highlight reel. Because one, when you watch those, you're to some degree ingraining the technique of them, and it's positive. It's going to build confidence. It's going to make you know, look at all this good, successful, hard work I've done. You know. Now I'm going to go do it where it matters. But yeah, setting aside time for that stuff, I think can be hugely, hugely important.
I think one thing to kind of quickly add on that too is be really careful about falling into the trap of like negativity, where you might be fixating on negative things, like I'm going to beat this person, or I'm going to, you know, or having a negative outlook on the competition, in that you're only going to feel good if you achieve some goal that, you know, someone else has to fail or something like that. Because it can quickly become this negative spiral where you focus on, I'm going to beat this person, or hit this number. And then when things don't work out, or something goes awry in your plan, then you start to spiral into everything's failing, right? Yeah. And then you can quickly end up in a place where, you know, you could have had a good day or could have salvaged a not so great start, and it turns into a really bad scenario for you.
Yeah, I think the positive self-talk, making it very intrinsic, almost like self-centered, honestly.
Yep.
Because it goes like what I said before, control what you can control. Don't worry about what you can't.
Yep.
You can't control the other people's performances. And you know, though it is about winning, you know, especially when you get to nationals and this kind of stuff, it's possible to have a very successful day and still not win.
Yeah,
everyone's going to kind of differ, you know, where they are in that level of competitiveness, especially at these meets, you know, 1,200 lifters at nationals, 1,600 lifters at AO3. There's a shitload of people who didn't win and still probably had positive days. But before we move on to our nationals preview, I want to take a quick second to hear and thank our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. You know what's not smart? Making the lottery the centerpiece of your retirement plan. But you know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife to hire the right person. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for the job, and actively invites them to apply, so you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife. That's ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife. ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So in a few days, we depart for possibly beautiful Spokane, Washington. I've been there once. Probably 20 years ago, youth nationals for track and field. Had a fantastic meet. So, riding high in Spokane. So we're going to get up there for just a weekend packed with powerlifting. 1,250 lifters at USAPL Raw Nationals. So let's just hop right into it with we'll see some of the best matchups of the weekend. With that many lifters, of course, there's tons of great classes, tons of competition that's going to be happening, but these ones stand out. It was the best class last year, I think, and it will be the best class again likely this year, the women's 63-kilo class. So yeah. It's got a couple of the usual suspects in there, but some of the other lifters, last year there was 5 lifters who went over 500 Wilks, 5 lifters who would have exceeded the 2017 Worlds championship, the winning total from 2017 Worlds, 5 women who exceeded that, but only 2 of them are still there. We've got Kristen Dunsmore moving up to the 72s, Meg Scanlon moving down to the 57s, Natalie Tirana, I believe, is out with injury, but the undefeatable, we'll see. Jennifer Thompson, reigning world champ, is back. Samantha Calhoun, who was second last year and second at Worlds, is back. And multiple-time national and world champion at 57 kilos, Jen Milliken, is moving up to the 63s. So going to be a great battle between those three women.
Milliken go up. She's just a solid total.
Yeah, Milliken's a stud.
And they all are. But.
Yeah, you know, I look at this, it's tough to pick against Jen Thompson because,
yeah,
she's never really won. I think Milliken is a year away from, from, you know, really filling out 63s the way that she can and letting her body get accustomed to those, to those weights. But I could, you know, I can definitely talk myself into this being the meet where Sam Calhoun overtakes Jen Thompson. She had the opportunity to do that at Worlds. I'm still sort of perplexed that she didn't try and put that, put the weight on the bar for her last deadlift to win the whole thing. Yeah, that was up to her and her coaches. But it's right there. I mean, she's super consistent. She seems to go 8 for 9, 9 for 9 all the time. I think that at Nationals, she will have the opportunity to pull for the win.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
Moving on to the women's 84 kilo class. There you have a head-to-head matchup of two extremely talented young women, Daniela Mello and Amanda Lawrence. You know, if you follow along powerlifting on Instagram, and you've probably seen Amanda Lawrence pop up on your Explore page a dozen times over the last, you know, several months, because it seems like every week or multiple times per week she's squatting and deadlifting huge, huge weights, like 490 for four, stuff like that, 515 for three in the squat. Doing reps with weights in excess of the American and world record at, I believe, 21 or 22 years old. Definitely both of these ladies are juniors, and for as outstanding as she's doing, she still needs to beat the world champion, Daniela Mello, who's also capable of those squats in the 520-ish range. Probably both women going to pull, you know, 540, maybe 550, maybe even more. So
huge numbers.
Yeah. Daniela Mello just put up a video benching 300. I think she's got a pretty big advantage in the bench press over Amanda, but you know, there's going to be a lot of records broken there. A really great head-to-head matchup, and you know, just like any of the classes, it comes down to making lifts when it counts. Instagram is one thing, and you know, maybe the depth isn't quite there, or straps, or whatever it is. Doing it, you know, in the prime time is going to be a different thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So moving on to the men's 93 kilo class. Now, last year, I think both you and I, from watching the men's, all the men's classes that we saw, were really competitive, and it was striking to see these guys at 83 and 93, particularly, who just look like they're, you know, going to walk off the platform onto the bodybuilding stage. But 93s, I think, is particularly competitive. So you have David Ricks, multiple-time world and national champion. You have Ashton Ruska, last year's national champion. L.S. McLean, who's two-time world champion. And then David Wilson, who's, you know, huge, huge deadlift. All those guys are seated within 15 kilos of each other. So when you have multiple people who have won world champions, when the defending national champion is there and the defending world champion, they're not the same guy, you know that that's an extremely competitive competitive weight class. So, you know, I think I'm leaning towards LS there, Jug Life guest LS McLean. He's performed the most consistently on the biggest stage. Dave Ricks, for as amazing as he is, and you're probably rooting for him since you guys shop for the same shoes, but he's got to be.
That's true.
Dave Ricks might be turning. He might be 60 or turning 60 next year.
I don't understand how that guy is. I mean, he is so strong.
Yeah, he's unbelievable, and he'll do stuff like miss two squats and then go up and make it. And
nuts.
Yeah, where it seems like he just like closes his eyes on the squat and is like, all right, we'll see what happens here.
Probably visualizing it.
Yeah. visualizing it while he's in the hole. Yeah, so that's going to be really, really competitive, a fun one to watch. Yep. For lifters that I think we're most excited to watch, individual lifters, of course, Ray Williams. He's going to lift the heaviest weights. I mean, it's everyone's fighting for second there. There's no, I don't think that's an insult to anyone. Like, they all know it as well. So always exciting to watch Ray. He's got such great energy on the platform, going to lift huge weights. So amazing to watch him. And then I think the name that people are really going to be talking about a few days from now is an athlete that you coach, Megan Scanlon. Tell us a little bit about her.
Meg contacted me at the beginning of the year, maybe...
right after the Arnold.
Yeah, right after the Arnold, probably April, May. And she started... She wanted to do some weightlifting and powerlifting together, so I came up with a super total program for her, and she did everything you wouldn't advise someone to do. She dropped a weight class and combined and learned powerlifting, or combined powerlifting and learning weightlifting all at the same time. But has done an excellent job with all those things and is in really good shape right now. I think the plan, obviously is to hit great numbers and get, we have an order of events that we're looking for, obviously, in terms of placement and then numbers, and then above that, anything bigger than that is all, cherry on the top. But she's in awesome shape. I'm excited to see her do well. And she's been trained super hard for it. So, yeah, it's been very cool.
Yeah, and there's been many times the last couple weeks, and particularly since Meg was out here a few weeks ago, where Marissa and I have just, seen one of her videos or something and just been like, shit, she is strong. Like,
she is incredibly strong, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That last year she competed as a 63, and her and Kristen really battled in the squat, and Meg didn't have the deadlift to stay up with those other girls, but she benched 102.5 at 63 at Nationals last year. Now, competing as a 57, I don't know exactly what she's weighing right now, but she just benched 108 for a double in training.
I mean, everybody knows that Max Ada is known for his benching.
Yeah, when you think bench press, you think Ada. just incredible squat and bench. And just such a sweet girl, hard worker. Yes. A real athlete with her background. Played soccer in college, then doing triathlons and marathons, and then coming to powerlifting and weightlifting. Like, she just loves to train and compete, and excited to see her put some really big numbers there. I wish that Jen Milliken actually was still a 57,
that'd be a good battle,
just for their head to head. But yeah, Meg is. Yeah, she would be my pick. Is she going to be the lifter of the meet for the women? She's been really impressive. I'm sure we'll record an episode with her when we're out there.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, so that's Nationals. That's some quick thoughts. If you see us around, come say hi. Take a picture, do whatever, that kind of stuff. Not this weekend, as we'll be at Nationals, but the following weekend. Here in Orange County, California, we have the SoCal Performance Summit. Max, myself, Dr. Mike, Dr. Quinn, Dr. James, and a new addition, Dr. Gabriel Fundaro, will be presenting about program design, technique development, injury rehab, recovery, the psychological aspects of diet and training success. And Dr. Fundaro will be talking about gut microbiome health, which I don't know anything about. So I might actually listen to that presentation, because I never listen to the rest of you guys anymore. I've heard them all so many times. But they can sign up for that. store.jtsstrength.com. SoCal Performance Summit. Earn CEUs for the NSCA. That's both October 20th and the 21st. So go check that out. If you're interested in coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, strongman, super total, or power building, visit juggernautcoaching.com. If you love the Jug Life, which we hope that you do, go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, write us something funny or nice, like Katya Janikov. Sounds international. Detailed, informative, and entertaining. The Jug Life is an amazing series put out by two very accomplished strength athletes and coaches. Their ability to clearly present information in an engaging way is the best I've seen in the strength and fitness game. Alongside that, their performance as coaches and competitors gives them a big leg up on the competition in terms of credibility. Frequently, they bring on equally, if not more, accomplished guests onto the show, including world-renowned coaches and Olympic champions from different sports. I've gotten a couple of my friends hooked, and they even went to check out their other stuff on YouTube. The only downside is you can't visually appreciate Chad's baby blues or Max's air dads through the audio version. So Katya Janikov, shoot me an email, chad@jtsstrength.com. We'll send you a shirt or something. Max, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, Facebook, or email me, max@jtsstrength.com.
All right. I'm Chad Wesley Smith, at Chad Wesley Smith and at Juggernaut Training on Facebook and Instagram. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.